Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, August 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. All eyes are on ECOWAS as an ultimatum for the military to return ousted Niger president to power expires.
As you know, for military intervention, there are many, many other hurdles. First, in most of the countries, before engaging your army outside of the country, you need to get the approval of the parliament.
Eswatini's King cautions aspiring MP candidates against racialistic killings to gain power. Guinea-Conakry bans the exportation of agricultural products. Campaigning for Liberia's October 10 election begins as former Vice President Boakai expresses hope the opposition will be victorious.
They know very well that the Weah government is a no-go for Liberia. And I believe that's what will bring us together to make sure that Weah goes.
And we'll examine the legal strategies of former President Donald Trump's team. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's polls are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The seven-day ultimatum imposed by the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, for Niger's military leaders to return ousted President Mohamed Bazoum to power expired on Sunday with no indication of a military intervention by the sub-regional group. France had expressed its support for any intervention. Meanwhile, there are signs of hesitation and criticism on Sunday in some capitals of the plan and its impact on the region. Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese political analyst. He tells me that the parliaments in some countries would like a vote before their countries go to war.
Many people are thinking about the military intervention. Yes, it was on the table. 2 days ago, the head of the armies of ECOWAS member state met in Abuja to discuss the strategy, and apparently they agreed on a strategy. But as you know, for military intervention, there are many, many other hurdles. First, in most of the countries, before engaging your army outside of the country, you need to get the approval of the parliament. And from what I heard in the media is that the Senate said they have to continue the dialogue with the military to see if there is no other option than the military, then he can come back. In Senegal yesterday, the parliament was sitting to vote a legislation. And during that conversation, some members of the parliament raised their concern about the engagement of Senegal outside of the Senegalese army without the approval of the army. And I believe that in countries like Ghana, in some other country in the region, Cote d'Ivoire, we need also some steps to be taken at the national level to sort out.
Now, why now that all these West African countries are pushing for military intervention when there have been these many coups in the region and nothing like that was ever suggested? Why Niger?
Well, I don't think that it has any importance. The decision is not just because it is Niger. I think the decision is also because ECOWAS wants to end all this instability in the region. And now you have another country coming to join the list of countries already where we have military coup. I think that's why ECOWAS decided to really stop this kind of situation and try to be bold enough to say enough is enough, and we need to stop all this nonsense about the military trying to get into the power when they need to be at the front to fight against insurgency.
France has promised military assistance if ECOWAS decides to take the military intervention route. What do you make of that?
Well, for France's situation in West Africa is unique because in most of the countries, the population don't like France anymore. The population believe that France is not part of the solution, but part of the problem. Now, the last countries in West Africa, at least in the Central Sahel, to accept the presence of French military is Niger. They were in Mali, in Burkina Faso. The government of these two countries have decided that they should not be there. And in Niger, you know, it's not just because they want to fight the insurgency, but it's also Niger is one of the countries, one of the biggest producers of uranium on the continent. And the Western countries don't want the uranium plant to be used by countries like Iran, by any militant groups, because they are afraid of the proliferation of nuclear weapons.
Ibrahima Khan is a Senegalese political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Dakar. France is suspending development aid and budgetary assistance to Burkina Faso, its foreign ministry announced on Sunday. The statement comes days after Burkina Faso and Mali announced that they would consider any military intervention against the new military rulers in Niger as a declaration of war. Meanwhile, Niger's coup leaders announced on Sunday that they had closed the country's airspace as the deadline for ECOWAS for them to hand back power or face a possible military intervention approached. A statement issued by the junta says any attempt to violate Niger's airspace will be met with an energetic and immediate response. Former Liberian Vice President Joseph Boakai said he believes the desire of most citizens to defeat President George Weah in the October 10 elections would be the catalyst that unites the much-divided opposition. Boakai, who is the candidate for the United Party, says his party is strong enough to win on the first ballot. But if that doesn't happen, the opposition might unite in the runoff. He is currently in the United States to meet with supporters. Meanwhile, the National Elections Commission announced August 5th, the beginning of official campaigning. Supporters of the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change on Friday paraded a symbolic casket around the capital, Monrovia, purporting to be that of Boakai. Boakai tells me the incident is unfortunate but not surprising.
That's unfortunate because after going and signing up to a peaceful election, for you to be depicting that, I think is unfortunate. But again, that's the CDC. We know them. That's how they are. But Unity Party will never be drawn into that.
I want to ask you, Mr. Vice President, many Liberians are asking also, what are the chances that the opposition will do well, particularly when they say you all are bitterly divided?
Well, I don't know what to talk about divided. We don't believe so. We may not be working with certain people, but we do understand that there's democracy. But as far as the Unity Party collaboration is concerned, we are strong enough to be able to go into that election. We do hope in the future, if there's any reason to draw on people, that we all see the bigger picture and work together.
I just interviewed someone who is a vice presidential candidate from another party. I mentioned the division among the opposition, and that person suggested, well, don't worry, when time comes, we will come together. Is that possible?
Very much so, because, you know, I think the Liberians know the situation on the ground. They know very well that the Weah government is a no-go for Liberia. And I believe that's what will bring us together to make sure that Weah goes so that the country can begin to see improvement, growth, and a real plan for development.
But, Mr. Vice President, you are talking about an incumbent president. One would think that the opposition should be approaching this election united, not to wait until a second round. That's wishful thinking.
Well, we are not looking for a second round. We are saying in the event that happened, but I have never been the one looking for a second. We believe that we're going to election to make it one round. But we are saying the options are there, but one round is what Unity Party and our collaborators are looking for.
I want to ask you about Mr. Benani Yuri. You and Mr. Benani Yuri and Mr. Henry Costa were good friends. You fell out with Mr. Alexander Comis, now Yuri and Costa. What is your view on these developments?
You say good friends. Maybe the word good may not be there anymore, but I don't let go friendship. I don't overlook it. But there are times in life that you have differences, and people go their way. You can't stop it. I was not the one who ran up from them. I made a decision that maybe was not acceptable to them, but again, it was my right to make a decision, and I made it.
Mr. Vice President, before I let you go, the issue of your health was plastered all over the world by Mr. Henry Costa, someone that you refer to as your son. How is your health?
Well, Henry Costa might be a doctor of another kind who can determine the health of people, but I'm moving around, and who should know best about their own health but himself? So maybe he knows more than the doctor and more than myself, but he's still my son.
Mr. Vice President, thank you so much. A pleasure always to talk with you.
It's always been my pleasure, and I thank you very much.
That was former Liberian Vice President Joseph Boakai and leader of the opposition Unity Party. He was speaking with me from Baltimore, Maryland, USA, campaigning for Eswatini's August 23rd parliamentary primary elections is underway. Analysts say polls there are not democratic because candidates associated with political parties are not allowed to participate. Also, King Mswati III last week cautioned aspiring candidates for parliament to stop committing racial murders to boost their chances of being elected. The king said there were many stories of ritualistic killings during national elections time, especially the killing of people with albinism. Government spokesperson Alpheus Zumalo tells me the king advised against such practice because it reflects negatively on the country.
You know, Africans have got certain belief systems for which he was warning about and alluding to. It's not necessarily the aspiring MPs who are suspect when there are these ritual murders, but they do, as a result of their belief system, go to traditional healers, and then traditional healers would advise that if you commit such a crime or you get a body part of a certain person, that will somehow aid your chances of winning election. You must remember we had in the past some court cases that ended up going to court of ritual murders. That is where most of the conclusions were drawn, that people go to various traditional healers during this season, and they are deceived to get body parts of people in order to aid their political aspirations. So His Majesty took time to strongly warn against this tendency and practice, that it should never be allowed, it should never be committed, especially because it does, at the end of the day, reflect negatively on members of parliament, even those that are innocent, because these ritual murders do happen quite often during this season of election.
How common is this practice, and does it come around only during elections?
Definitely, we do have some sporadic incident of that nature within the five-year period without any elections. But the experience of the past elections are that during this particular season, the cases will escalate. Hence, His Majesty took time to warn aspiring members of parliament not to be tempted to believe into these anarchistic practices.
Has anyone been apprehended so far, or this is just a warning?
Not one has been apprehended so far. It is just a warning. However, the police do have recorded right now up to four persons that have disappeared. Two of them have been found murdered with some missing body parts, and the two others are still being traced by our law enforcement agency.
I cannot let you go or talk about these elections without asking the representative nature of these elections. How representative do you think they are?
They are pretty very much representative in the sense that members of political formations are participating fully in these elections. They've nominated and fielded their own candidates that are contesting. Members of communities have nominated their representatives who are contesting these elections on individual basis. And of course, we do have a number of political formations like the People's United Democratic Movement, PUDEMO, who is currently operating outside of the country for now. They have taken a decision that they will not participate in these elections because of probably their political ideology, which believes that the elections should be contested by political parties. We do not have political parties' name contesting these elections. They are not reflected even in our ballot papers.
Alpheus Zumalo is the Eswatini government spokesperson. He was speaking to us from the capital, Mbabane. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 7th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Guinea's agricultural minister has announced a ban on the export of basic agricultural products for at least 6 months. The ban has irritated traders and trade unions. They say the action goes against ECOWAS protocols on cross-border trade, but the Minister of Agriculture says the move is meant to fight against price increases of basic foods and to create food insufficiency for ordinary Guineans. Reporter Karim Kamara reports from Conakry.
The announcement by the Trade Ministry banning the export of certain agricultural products surprised farmers, traders, and transport owners. Abdullahi Sharif Abdallah is the chairman of the organized group of businessmen, GOWA. He says farmers are bewildered by the decision. He says farmers work to sell their products to neighboring countries, and some are also sold in New York and other parts of the U.S. and Europe. He says, therefore, they should not take a decision like this without informing farmers, traders, and transport owners. The ban is expected to last for at least 6 months and would affect the export of onions, fish, peanut, rice, and palm oil. Joseph Kunduno is the director of internal trade at the Ministry of Commerce. He justifies the ban, which he says is meant to guarantee food security in Guinea. He says they have the obligation to ensure that domestic supplies are able to meet consumer demand. So he says government noticed that there were not enough stock, which is why there is now a ban on the export of certain agricultural products. Due to the seriousness of the situation, the Guinean Chamber of Commerce says it is negotiating with the Ministry of Trade to lift the ban. Suleiman Jallo of the Chamber of Commerce says the ban is likely to have effect on certain perishable products. He says at present they are in intense negotiations with the Ministry of Trade to lift the ban because onions, for example, cannot be preserved for a long time. He says consumers in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea-Bissau are directly affected by the ban because Guinea is where they get their supply. Police, gendarmes, and custom officers have been fully deployed along the borders to make sure that the decision is applied. Many traders from Sierra Leone and Liberia are stranded here in Conakry and throughout the country with their goods due to the ban. Reporting for VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
Members of former President Donald Trump's legal team say they will oppose federal prosecutors' request to limit what they share publicly about Trump's latest indictment. The case appears to be growing thornier, but global reactions are coming in slowly. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias talked to political analysts as to why that might be.
A sham is how former President Donald Trump, who is running again for the job, described his latest indictment when he rallied on Saturday in front of his supporters in Columbia, South Carolina. Last week, he appeared in court for allegedly conspiring to overturn his presidential election loss in 2020. The prosecution will have a hard time proving that, argued Trump's lawyer, John Lauro, on ABC's This Week show.
Whether or not he was acting corruptly, whether or not he was acting with a consciousness of guilt, with criminal intent, they'll never be able to prove that.
After Trump posted online what appeared to be a revenge promise on anyone who goes after him, prosecutors asked a federal judge to limit the information he and his team can publicly share about the case. The legal team has until Monday to respond. Laura commented on CNN.
The press and the American people in a campaign season have a right to know what the evidence is in this case, provided that this evidence is not protected otherwise. So we're going to oppose it.
Former Vice President Mike Pence, who is also a presidential hopeful and could be called to testify in the case, explained on CNN why he rejected Trump's lawyers' requests to overturn the 2020 election.
No vice president or any one person should ever have the right to choose the American president. The presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone.
Global reactions to Trump's legal challenges have been slow in coming. James Long, professor of political science at the University of Washington, isn't surprised.
Some leaders in specific countries have sort of internalized the wrong message from Trump's behavior thus far. But I think right now they're probably wise to stay quiet and let this process play itself out as they continue to try to have healthy diplomatic relationships with the United States.
Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup as Nigeria's Super Falcons will come up against the Three Lionesses of England in the second round of the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand on Monday. Nigeria qualified for the round of 16 of the competition after playing out a goalless draw with the Republic of Ireland. The Three Lionesses finished top in Group A, but coach Randy Wardrum of the Super Falcons said they are up against the task.
We know what the task is in front of us, and we obviously know England are very, very good. They're not European champions for nothing. So we'll be prepared as best we can for that challenge. I do think we flew in under the radar to probably everybody else. But I do think the players came in here with a lot of confidence from day one.
On Sunday, Coach Desiree Ellis lauded her Bayana team's overall performance at the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup in the wake of their agonizing elimination from the tournament on Sunday. Bayana had enjoyed an historic run into the FIFA Women's World Cup playoffs, but they were eliminated in the round of 16 at the hands of the Netherlands at the Allianz Stadium in Sydney. Goals from Jill Rode and Lynette Bersenten saw the Dutch side progress to the quarterfinals, while Bayana's journey came to an end. Coach Ellis says she's proud of what her team has accomplished and vows that they will come back stronger.
I think the whole of South Africa should be very proud of this team, and everybody expected a victory. But we've also played against a very good side. We've played against a side that was not expected to end top of their group and end the top of their group. We're just proud, disappointed, of course, but really proud of the group of players.
In netball news, Australia thumped England 61-45 in Sunday's 2023 Netball World Cup final at the Cape Town International Convention Centre. The result sees the Diamonds lifting the trophy presented by South African President Cyril Ramaphosa for a record-extending 12th time in the history of the global showpiece. Having lost out to New Zealand by just one goal in the previous Netball World Cup final in Liverpool 4 years ago, Australia ensured there will be no repeat scenario where they outscored England by 16 points in the final in Cape Town on Sunday. In basketball, Nigeria's female basketball team, the Tigress, defeated Senegal on Saturday to win the 2023 FIBA Women's Afrobasket Championship for the fourth consecutive time. Nigeria became the first team to win four FIBA Women's Afrobasket titles in a row over the last four decades, thanks to an 84-74 win over Senegal on Saturday in Kigali, Rwanda. For newly appointed the Tigress head coach Rena Wakama, she became the first woman to lead a team to the AfroBasket title. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good Monday. And that is it. And that's it for this Monday, August 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.